We're in part two of a four-part series called Shift. And what we're doing is we're looking at the writings of one man, the Apostle Paul, in the New Testament. He wrote a letter to a group of Christians that were living in the city of Philippi. And so the letter is called Philippians. And we're looking at this letter. And what we realize is that in this letter, Paul says that something big took place in his life. That a big shift took place at a time in his life. And before that, he had been pursuing a lot of different things in life. And when this shift took place, it shifted his thinking, it shifted his attitude, it shifted the way he perceived everything. And it wasn't that the things he was pursuing before were necessarily wrong or bad things. It's just he realized he needed to pursue them in a very different way. And so last time we got together, Stephen kicked off the series, and we talked about the pursuit of contentment. And that's something that's very relevant to all of us, because we all want to pursue contentment. We all want to be content and happy in life, and we want to get to that place where we feel content and happy. And yet for most of us, finding contentment is usually dependent on our situation, our circumstances, how much money we make, if the market's doing well, if the economy's doing well, if we're able to afford a good home and a good, you know, lifestyle and all of those things. And when we're not, usually, we're not very content. And yet, we read this passage where Paul was able to say, I have learned to be content no matter what the circumstance. That when things are going really well, and when I've got a lot, or when things aren't going so well at all, and I don't have anything. And there were times in Paul's life where he had literally nothing. And he said, even in those times, I've learned to be content. Now, if you were like me, you walked away probably and thought, wow, I wish I could learn that kind of contentment. I wish I could pursue contentment in that way. There must have been something else even more foundational to Paul and to his worldview that gave him that perspective. Because you remember we said what Paul was able to do was just go to God with his needs and his desires. And he was able to ask God, and if God gave him what he wanted, great. If he didn't get what he wanted, he could still be content. So this week, we're going to back up. We read from the very end of the book of Philippians last time. This week, we're going to back up and read from chapter 3. And we're going to see that Paul talks about pursuing something else, something that's very relevant to all of our lives. It's the pursuit of status, or the pursuit of value. Because you see, we all want to pursue a certain level of status in our lives, especially when it comes to our status in the eyes of other people. I mean, we want to pursue status in the eyes of our families. You know, when you maybe left home after high school or went to college or went and got a job, you wanted to achieve all the expectations that your family placed on you. You wanted to reach a certain status in their eyes. You wanted to live up to those expectations. Or maybe you wanted to prove them wrong. Maybe their expectations weren't so high of you and you wanted to show them, you know, I've arrived. I was okay. I made it. Every day we want to achieve status or value in our peers' eyes, don't we? The people we work with, the people we live near, the people who see the kind of cars we drive, who see the kind of house we live in. There's something inside of us that wants to achieve or arrive at a certain level of status so that in their eyes we feel like we've met some sort of expectation. We've done something that makes them feel like they like us or they approve of us in some sort of way. And for those of us who are Christians, I think, you know what? I think we want to achieve a certain status in God's eyes. Because we believe that God loves us, and we believe he sent his son, and his son died for us and gave us some sort of life. And yet, I think even deep down as Christians, there's something in us that wants to let God know it was worth it. That we were worth him dying on a cross for us, that we were worth it, and that we've done something with our life, and our lives are meaningful, and we've achieved something that's worthy of him sending his son for us. We want to achieve some sort of status. Now, how do you measure this, and how do you go about doing this? Well, I think we do it every single time we apply for a job, and for many of us, we've had to do that in the last year or so. You've had to put together a resume, just like I had to put together a resume. And every time we put a resume together to apply for a job, what do we usually do? At the very top, we list our education. And we talk about if you went to college or what kind of degrees you got, and if you won any awards or if you had a good GPA, you'll list that, or anything that you can think of that you can put on there that's going to make you look good in the eyes of the person looking at your resume, you'll put on there. And then you list your work experience or your achievements or your accomplishments. You list all the things again. So you're going through your life and you're thinking, what can I do? What can I put on this piece of paper that when I put it before someone else's eyes, they're going to look at it and they're going to say, there's no way we should pass up this guy. There's no way we should pass up this girl because they've got everything that it takes. They're somebody who's got it all. Look at all the accomplishments. Look at all the things. We've got to hire this person. Now, I think that we mentally do that every time we interact with someone else. There's almost a sense we're always working on our resume, aren't we? And I'm not talking about, you know, looking for a job, because that's acceptable in the job, you know, career world. You have to put together a resume and you have to put your credentials out there so someone will hire you, and that's all fine and good. But I think there's something that every single time we interact with other people, we're sort of subtly putting things in front of them, you know, so that we have a little bit higher status in their eyes. I mean, we love for them to see the kind of house we live in, if we live in a good house, the kind of neighborhood we live in, the kind of education we might drop in there, what books we're reading, what political issues, you know, we're fired up about. If we think they're fired up about them, you know, we'll put that in. Anything we can do or point out, anything that we can reflect on about our own life that may give us value or status in their eyes, we'll throw it out there, because I think there's just something in human nature that each of us longs to pursue status and value, even if we're Christians. Now, Paul had something really revolutionary to say about this pursuit. And so that's what we're going to read tonight. If you brought a Bible, Philippians chapter 3 is where we're going to take a look. And in a minute, we're going to read the verses and we'll put them up on the screen if you didn't bring a Bible. But basically, Paul is talking about another issue. And as he's writing in chapter 3, he's writing about something else that's going on. And it's sort of as an aside, he throws in this comment that, look, if you're pursuing status, and he doesn't use that word actually, but if you've got things about your life that you're proud of, if there's things that you think give you value and status in life, guess what? I can point to a time in my life where I had more things than you could have ever dreamed of. And it's almost like he gives us his resume or his list of things that gave him value or status in his life. Let's read what he says in Philippians chapter 3, starting in the second part of verse 4. He says, if others think they have reasons to put confidence in the flesh, I have more. In other words, again, if anyone can point to themselves and say, hey, look at all the stuff I've done or all the stuff that give me value or status, I've got more things that I can lean into or depend on. And then he gives this long list. He says, circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews. In regard to the law, a Pharisee. As for zeal, persecuting the church. As for righteousness, based on the law, faultless. Now, in Paul's culture, this was a really serious list. Like, if you just start looking at these different things, I mean, the first thing he says is, I was circumcised on the eighth day. In other words, my family, my parents kept the law. From the minute I was born, they did what was right in regards to my life. And so I've been keeping the law, basically, you could say, until I was a baby. Then he says, I'm of the people of Israel. Now, again, we can't just gloss by that, because he's writing to Christians, many of whom are Gentiles. That means they were not Jewish in background. They were Gentiles. And so it's almost like he's saying, look, I was a part of God's family before you were a part of God's family. I'm of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin. Now, in Israel, there were two tribes that were the most prominent, the most favored, that people looked up to the most. It was Benjamin and Judah. So there's a sense that Paul is saying, look, I'm of one of the good tribes. Like, I'm not just an Israelite, I'm a Benjaminite. You know, have you ever met somebody from Texas? It's kind of like that. You know, I'm an American, but I'm a Texan. Like, they just think that almost trumps everything else. That's the kind of pride or arrogance, however you want to look at it, that Paul had about his tribe. Then he says, I'm a Hebrew of Hebrews. You know, it's kind of like summarizing the whole thing. I mean, if anyone was as Hebrew or Jewish, you know, as they could be, I was it. He goes on. He says, look, in regards to the law, I was a Pharisee. You see, in Judaism at that time, there were many different groups of Jews. And the Pharisees, which you've heard of from the stories about Jesus, the Pharisees were really the most prominent group. They were the most holy of holy people. They were the people that took the law the most seriously and obeyed every single law to the letter of the law as best as they could. It took you years and years of studying and memorization and achievements and accomplishments and everything just to sort of get in the Pharisee club. And so anybody that was a Pharisee was pretty much cream of the crop in terms of the Israelite people. So he says, look, when it comes to law, I was a Pharisee. When it comes to zeal, when it comes to my passions, I persecuted the church. Because you see, in that time, they hated Christians. Christianity was just a little heretical sect of Judaism. So Paul's saying, look, you want to test how serious I was about my faith, how passionate I was? I waited till the Christians would meet on Sundays and I would go persecute them and throw them into jail. That's how serious I was about my faith. And then to wrap it all up, he says, look, as for righteousness based on the law, faultless. In other words, I pretty much kept the law perfectly. Now, that doesn't mean he didn't sin, because if you know in the law, there are provisions for sin. And so you offered sacrifices when you did screw up. So he's not saying he was perfect and sinless. He's just saying, if anybody could put together a resume and point to things in their life, like if you had to put together all the sort of negative things about you and all the positive things about you, my negative column was empty and my positive column was full of every accolade you could put on a Hebrew at that time. Probably didn't know this, but Paul actually Twittered. Did you know that? Is anybody in here Twitter? Paul actually Twittered. Before he was a Christian, his name was Saul. So let's scroll down and actually look at his Twitter feed, see some of the things. Let's see here. Just got invited. See, look at all this. Like, he's letting people know everything going on. I'm keeping the law, Sabbath starting, performing a circumcision tomorrow, harassing Christians on Sunday, going to be a great weekend. Let's see some of the other things going on. Yeah, see, Paul, see, this is what Paul would have been doing. He would have been letting everybody know about everything in his life that gave him value and status. Okay, we can take that down now. See, Paul had it all. He had everything going for him. He could have come to anybody and said, I've done it all. I've arrived. I've got everything I could ever want that gives me value and status. And then Paul had a huge shift in his life. Look at what he writes next to this group of Christians. But whatever were gains to me, I have considered loss for the sake of Christ. Now, in this verse, Paul starts using accounting terms. The Greek words Paul actually originally wrote in the Greek, so what we're reading are English translations. But he uses these accounting terms and these business terms. And again, it's almost as if he's saying, look, if you had two columns, and you had all the negatives or all the debts and then all the credits, I had a ton of credits. And I just listed those six or seven things. I could have listed a ton more, but I had so many things going for me. But I came to a place in my life where all the things that were gains and credits and pluses for me, I considered them losses. Like all of those things that were going for me that gave me value and gave me status in other people's eyes or even in God's eyes, I came to a place and I recognized those things were actually losses. Like they weren't pluses. They weren't just neutral. They were negatives for me. Why? Because I met Christ. You see, when Paul met Christ, he realized all the things in his life that he was pursuing to give him value and give him status were actually hindering him from pursuing the one thing that had the most value in his life. And that was Christ. He keeps going and he says this in verse 8. He says, well, what is more? And that's actually, that's like five little Greek words. There's all these words that he put together and we translate it, what is more? But he's making this big shift in his argument. And it's almost like he's saying, hold on. Here's the whole kicker of it all. Listen to what I'm about to say. What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whose sake I've lost all things. that now, see, there's two shifts that take place when he writes here. It's not just those things I listed before now are losses, but now I consider everything that could possibly give me value a loss. And then in the verse before, he said, I have considered. So something took place, and it was when he met Jesus Christ. And there's this dramatic story. You can go read it in the book of Acts sometime. But Paul basically met Jesus Christ one day, and this huge shift took place in his life. But now he switches to the present tense. And it could actually be even, I continue to consider everything. Every day I consider everything. I make it a habit of always considering everything now a loss. That some shift took place, and now there's a shift that takes place every single day I wake up, where I need to say, everything that could be a gain, I consider a loss. Why? Because of the, and it's actually just one word in the Greek, the surpassingness, the ultimateness, the overwhelmingness, the supremeness of one thing. Knowing Jesus Christ. That all of those other things are basically losses compared to one thing in my life. Knowing Jesus Christ. And he goes on, he says, for whose sake I have actually lost all things. Now, it's kind of a strange phrase. Does that mean Paul actually lost all of those things? Like, did he stop becoming Jewish? Was he not from the tribe of Benjamin anymore? Was he not circumcised anymore? Like, did he start not obeying the law? Like, did he actually physically lose all those things? Well, that's kind of crazy. We know he didn't physically lose those things, but that's where this term is so important. It's an accounting term he uses. He says, I consider them, or I regard them, or I count those things as losses. In other words, I haven't actually lost those things, but there was a time in my life where they held a special value for me. And I leaned into them. I depended on them to give me my value, to give me my status. And now I've come to a place where I've considered those things no longer valuable for me to give me my value and to give me my status. Because there's really only one thing that can give me value and status. And just in case we missed it, he kind of drives it home in his next sentence. He says, I consider those things garbage. And this is actually like a four-letter word in the New Testament. It's not, I mean, garbage is like the nice way. Dung is sort of still a nice way to say it. That's basically the word that Paul is using here. He says, I consider all of those things dung that I may gain Christ and I may be found in him. Not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ. The righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faith. Now, do you know what that means if you're here tonight and you're maybe not a Christian? Because this is a lot of sort of talk about Jesus and religious stuff, that Paul was depending on these religious things and keeping the law, and now he's not anymore. You know what I think that means if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian? It means that you're probably going to come to a point in your life like Paul where you're going to realize that all the things you were just leaning into, maybe even in subtle ways, you didn't consciously do it. None of us consciously do it. But all the things that you were leaning into, your accomplishments, your grades, the kind of job you had, the kind of money you made, the kind of clothes you could wear, you know, the things you did, all the stuff that you were leaning into that you thought was giving you value and status, you're probably going to come to a point in your life, like Paul, where you're going to realize, you know what? Those things actually work against finding the things that give me true value and true status, not only in other people's eyes, but maybe in God's eyes. Now, for those of us who are here tonight and we're Christians, we got to remember, Paul was writing this to Christians. He was writing this to a group of people in Philippi, a church that he had actually started about 10 years before. So many of these people had been Christians for 5 or 10 years, maybe some of them even longer. And yet he felt like he needed to write to them and say, look, a huge shift took place in my life. A huge shift continues to take place in my life every single day. And a huge shift needs to take place in your life, where you realize that all the things that you want to put your value and your status in are actually losses compared to one thing. That there's really only one thing that's important. And you probably came to a place in your life when you became a Christian, and maybe you were down and out, maybe things were going terrible, and you feel like you found God in that moment. Or maybe you actually realized, truthfully, God found you in that moment, and he rescued you from yourself, he rescued you from your situation, from your dysfunction, from all the stuff, and you reached out to him, and you placed all your faith in him. And you, at that point in your life, a shift took place, and you recognized it, and yet you just sort of continue to go on with life. And there's stuff to do, and there's work to be done, and there's employees to manage, and there's articles to write, and there's kids to teach and raise, and there's all kinds of stuff. And it's so easy to slip back into thinking, well, that's where I find my value. That's where I find my status. And yet it's almost as if Paul is shaking us up and saying, no, don't forget, there is really only one thing, bold statement. There's really only one thing in this world that has the most surpassing value, and that's to know Jesus. We read the next verse, he tells us what that means, and this is where he concludes by saying, and let me tell you what it means to know Jesus. Let me tell you what I think the goal should be in your life every day you wake up. He says, I want to know Christ. Yes, to know the power of his resurrection and participation in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection of the dead. You see, Paul is saying, let me just give you a definition. If you want to know, this is a great definition for people who are not Christians and don't get Christianity, and they hear people talk about following Christ or knowing Jesus. Well, what does that mean? It's a great definition for all of us to say, well, what does it really mean to know Christ? It means to know the power of his resurrection. That is, when Jesus rose from the grave that we saw in we read in the Apostles' Creed earlier, a foundational belief of Christians, that when he rose from the grave, there's a sense that he gives new life from that to everybody who follows him. That there's new power, there's new meaning, there's new purpose, there's new life in that. And so to know Christ is to know that new life that he wants to give us. And yet it also means to know his sufferings, to participate in his sufferings, to become like him in his death. You see what I think Paul is saying here? Is he talking about like physical death? Maybe. People in the Philippian church in that day were being persecuted. Some of them were actually losing their lives for their faith. And so probably to some of them, this was hope. And you know what I think he's saying to you and to me? He's saying, you're going to have to die to finding your value and your status in all of those other things. That it'll feel like death to you when you reach a point in your life and when you have to wake up every day and say, you know what? Those things that could give me value and status today, I'm just going to die to that. I'm going to have to let that go. And as hard as that is and as difficult as that is, we're going to have to do it. You know what? I think Paul is just echoing the words of Jesus here. Remember what Jesus said one time when he was talking to his followers? He says, if you want to follow me, you're going to have to deny yourself. You're going to have to take up your cross, not just once. He says, take up your cross daily. Same imagery, dying to yourself. Take up your cross daily and follow me. And then do you remember what Jesus says? He says, for what does it profit someone? What does someone gain? Same exact word that Paul is using in this passage. What does someone gain if they gain the whole world and yet they lose their very soul? See, Paul's saying, let's switch it around. Let's take a shift and take all those things that we think are gains and recognize that they're losses. Because there's really only one thing that's a gain to us. And that's knowing Jesus. Now, this brings up all kinds of questions, and we're not going to answer them tonight. But just, I think a few questions is, what does this look like practically? I mean, Do you wake up every day and just say, well, I'm going to forget everything else. I'm not going to go to my job. I'm not going to pay the bills. I'm not, you know, because I just need to know Jesus. And that's all I need to do today. You know, forget interacting with other people. Forget other relationships. There's only one. Well, no, that's not what it means. In fact, we're going to come back in the next, in 2 weeks, in part three, because Paul's got another shift that he wants to tell us about when it comes to living this out, especially when we interact with other people and other relationships. You know, another question I think it raises is, well, participating in Jesus' sufferings, like, is he saying that Christians are supposed to suffer in life? I don't know. But Paul's got something else to say about that, and we'll come back to that in part four. But I think here's the biggest question we need to ask tonight, and the question that we need to ask as we go forward of the next week. Are we waking up every single day and saying, you know what? If all the things that give me value and status in my life are actually losses, if those things work against me, if those things have the ability to pump me up and make me more self-sufficient, more focused on myself, more proud of who I am, then they're working against me. They're working against pursuing the one thing that gives me the most value. And so let me ask you to do this week. Would you be willing to wake up every single morning and just pray this prayer? Lord, I want to know you today. I want to consider everything else a loss compared to knowing you. That doesn't mean you don't do anything else. That doesn't mean there aren't still important things that we need to do in our lives. That doesn't mean God hasn't placed us in jobs and families and relationships that are important. But compared to knowing Jesus, I want to count everything else as a loss. If you woke up every day this week, and whether it was when you took a shower or brushed your teeth, or if you've got just a couple minutes of time or driving to work, but if you just blocked out, you know, 30 seconds or a minute to just to say that, to pray it, to write it down in a journal or whatever, to just say, Jesus, I want to know you more today. I want to consider everything else a loss compared to knowing you. Would you help me do that? How do you think it would change your day? How do you think it would change everything else you do? Because you still need to do everything else, but I think it would give us a whole new perspective. It would give us the same shift that Paul had. So would you try maybe just doing that this week? Maybe just take every day this week and just start off the day by saying that.